Welcome to the Fallon Forum, Ed Fallon with you folks. This week's program is a compilation of content we ran earlier this year that remains relevant. We will be back next week with new guests and new content. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, so I detest negative campaigning. There are candidates that I was supporting years ago that I bailed on because they switched to negative attack ads. And I told them ahead of time. Actually, one of them was Tom Vilsack. Another was Jack Hatch. I said, look, I'm going to support you, but if it gets negative, if you start attacking your opponent and it gets ugly and you start saying things that are untrue or unhelpful, I'm going to bail. And I did. I think it's legitimate to point out differences between you and your opponent. I think it's most important to focus on what you're all about. But I want to talk about two attack pieces that really bug me. And both are from Democrats. One of them is from, was written by Francis Baugus, who I've known a long, long time. And it was published in Bleeding Heartland and circulated elsewhere as well. And it was an attack piece on Sarah Trungariat. And he doesn't come off as if he's supporting Trungariat's opponent, but he is. He's held a house party for her. He's donated to her campaign. So he's clearly against Sarah Trungariat, but doesn't say it. But he points out a talk she gave back in 2023 for the Des Moines Register's Storytellers Project. And in the video, Trungariat describes the first wedding she performed to marry a pair of Satanists. Then Baugus writes, I'll be clear, I have no personal issue with Satanists. Like many other Iowans, I believe their First Amendment rights should be protected just like everyone else's. Okay, so if he had no trouble with Satanists, he probably wouldn't have brought it up because that's kind of tangential. But he goes on to say, what bothers me is the tone Trungariat used when talking about working class people, whether they, and you look, it's, you really have to stretch to find that in the speech she gave. So I actually went to the speech. I listened to it. It was beautiful. It was powerful. And it was mostly about her learning new things about people and learning to accept them in a Christian way. She's a Lutheran minister. It was really, if you watch the speech, you'd be really hard-pressed not to be very, very taken by it. You have to really, really want to find negative stuff in it, which Baugus clearly did. So it just, and he's arguing that, well, because of the way she talks about rural people, that itself is inaccurate. But his contention is because of the way she talks about rural people, she's never going to win the 3rd Congressional District. Okay, well, yeah, I was pleased to see that there were three comments in the Bleeding Heartland story that were all critical of what Baugus was trying to say. There was a comment by Kimberly Baugus, and yeah, no surprise, his daughter, who wrote, this was on Facebook actually, she wrote, quote, well-meaning folks don't understand that politics today is a blood sport. Everything is on the table and it's fair game. Don't like it, stay on the porch. Okay, that right there is everything that's wrong with politics today. Politics is a blood sport. Anything is fair game. Come on, folks. If you really believe that, then you're part of the problem. You're part of the problem. And after this 220-mile march I did, one thing I heard over and over again is I want candidates to tell me what they believe in, what they stand for. I don't want negative attacks. And unfortunately, negative attacks do work. So I know that's why politicians do them. But I think that one against Sarah Chong Garrett will probably backfire because it's so lame. But that said, I think it's important to respond to these things. I want to tell you one more out there that's bugging me, and that's Christina Bohannon, who I have nothing against. She's running for the Democratic nomination in the Southeast District of Iowa. She put out a piece, actually several pieces, that I believe are going to presumed Democratic supporters. And it's you've seen this before. It's got the pretty colored photo of the candidate on one side, and you flip to the other side, and it's the ugly black and white photo of the opponent, in this case, Marianne Miller Meeks, who looks like a witch. I mean, her hair is just all over the place. She's snarling. That is so wrong. You know, if you believe you have to stoop to that level, then you need to do some soul searching. I mean, I have nothing against Christina Bohannon. I've liked what she's done and said in the past, but this mailing, I don't know who's advising her in doing these kinds of attack pieces, but they better reconsider that, because I'm not the only voter out there who finds that detestable. And part of my perspective on detestable negative campaigning is very personal. When I ran for governor, one of my opponents, he was very clever about it. He didn't put it right out there himself. He had other people spread the word that I was anti-gay, anti-woman, anti-union. And he did that in Johnson County, which is the most, you know, quote, liberal county in the state, and a very important county in a Democratic primary. It's a county I should have won. I won 8 counties. That should have been the 9th county that I won, and I didn't, because I thought it was so stupid that I wouldn't bother to push back against it. The same year that I ran for governor, Denise O'Brien ran for Secretary of Agriculture, and she was ahead in the polls of her Republican. She won the primary, and she was ahead in the polls. Just going into the last month or so of the election, and her Republican opponent came out with a horrible attack piece that alleged that her husband, Larry Harris, was guilty of animal cruelty. They have a farm in Cass County. Now, Larry Harris is the most wonderful, gentlest, kindest guy you'll ever meet, and the allegation was completely false. But instead of effectively pushing back against it, they said, this is too stupid. You know, we're going to ignore it. Just like I ignored the Ed Fallon is anti-woman, anti-gay, anti-unions. So, you know, I learned the hard way that you have to respond to negative attack ads. You can't just ignore them. And I sure got it when I ran for Congress. I mean, and it was some crazy stuff, too. Because I had made a mistake, I voted for Al Gore. I voted for Ralph Nader back in 2000. Again, not my brightest decision. I was really ticked off at Al Gore for a number of reasons, especially for choosing Joe Lieberman as his running mate, who ended up becoming a Republican, by the way. So, I voted for Nader. I said it wasn't the best idea, but that didn't stop my opponent in the Democratic primary, Leonard Boswell, from attacking me on it. And this is great stuff. It shows a really goofy picture of me. And it says, Ed Fallon believed Ralph Nader. He helped elect George Bush by endorsing and actively campaigning for Ralph Nader. With nearly 4,000 of our soldiers killed in Iraq, you know, Ed Fallon's support for Ralph Nader is unforgivable. So basically, even though Al Gore won Iowa, I elected George Bush. I caused the Iraq War. Ironically, my opponent voted for the war. So, I mean, this stuff is crazy. It's horrible. But it has to be pushed back. You cannot ignore it. You have to push back against it. Or people, even if they don't like they don't like it, it makes an impression on them. So, yeah. Negative campaigning. Bad stuff. Challenge it, folks. I got to take a short break. Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week.
Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you, folks. Hey, thanks again to our sponsors and our partners, including Catholic Peace Ministry. CPM promotes peaceful resolution to war and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrom Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrom and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry. All right, Reka Basa with me today, folks. Hey, Reka, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here, Ed.
So I want to share, you know, a lot of us are very concerned about where our country is heading. Mm. And in fact, some of my best friends are deciding to head out of the country. They're so upset the way things are going.
Yep.
They're leaving.
Yep.
I wish they wouldn't, because I feel things are changing. And here's a couple examples. A friend of mine who had voted for Trump 3 times, wrote to me recently, "I base my support for Trump on what he said, and he is clearly doing the opposite with the full-throated support of the cult which follows him. It used to be, quote, we're for a balanced budget. Now it's the big, beautiful bill will save America. It used to be, you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead hands. And now it's, people should know better than to go around armed to a protest. It used to be keep government out of our personal business to armed, fast, federal thugs are the way to true liberty." Mm. So, you know, this is just one Trump supporter having, major buyer's remorse. Here's another one. You know Robert Reich, the former U.S. Mm-hmm. Department
sure.
of Commerce Secretary.
He's become a Trumpster?
No, not at all. He writes once or twice a day, in fact.
He's on fire.
He is on fire, yes. In a recent column, Reich, he wrote about a chance encounter he had with a stranger in a cafe. I think it might have been up in New Hampshire. The guy came up to him and said, "I've been a lifelong Republican, but the events of the past weeks have caused me to leave the Republican Party." And Reich says, "I'm happy to hear that." And then he kind of turned to finish his breakfast. The guy continued, "I'm from New Hampshire, and many of my Republican friends are leaving the party, too." He said, "Minneapolis was the last straw." And Reich says, "I put down my fork, and I turned toward him again. I assume you're talking about the behavior of ICE and Border Patrol agents there and the killings."
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said, quote, "All terrible, of course, but what really finished me were the lies. Noam, Miller, Bovino, Vance, Trump. They all lie through their teeth. I saw the video. They're a pack of liars."
Mm.
So, and then, of course, my favorite politician, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Mm. For many years, I believe. Right?
No. Bailed ship.
Yeah.
And I think the fracture in the MAGA base is becoming more bigger than a fracture. And I think it's going to point to, I think the way things are going, it's just going to keep getting bigger. Am I overly optimistic?
I mean, from where I sit, you are very optimistic. I would love to believe that that's true. But most of the Republicans that we hear from are unwilling, because they're in office at one level or another,
right,
at state, local, or federal level. They really feel like they have to kiss up to Trump and abide by everything he says, because he will call them out, or he will primary someone against them in ways that, by the way, Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa has done,
too.
She has done it successfully. A position on vouchers, school vouchers, for example. So, I mean, I worry a lot about people who are in office, but I do think there have been certain issues that have woken up his MAGA base, and one of those is the Epstein files and wanting to get to...
One of many,
absolutely.
So you're saying the Trump MAGA base is now woke?
Is now woke. I think some of them are waking up. I think some of them are waking up. But I have noticed in my own neighborhood and in various neighborhoods around Des Moines, there are a lot of groups forming, a number of them, by the way, led by women, that want to challenge Trump and get people to stop voting for Trump and start the narrative about it. But and I went to a meeting just over the weekend to hear some of what they were saying. And I said, you know, it's all about personal stories. What is the narrative that you use with a Trump supporter? What is the most successful narrative? What would you say is?
For me, it's pretty diverse. I mean, I did my 220-mile walk around Iowa there back in October. Mm-hmm. And I'd met a lot of farmers. They were concerned about the impact of tariffs, mm-hmm. About the cost, about the $40 billion bailout to Argentina, allowing China to buy those soybeans at a reduced cost. Mm-hmm. You know, that made no sense to them. But there were other arguments that really ticked people off as well. There was one guy, he says, I don't understand why we're spending all this money to send the federal police to Portland. You know, mm-hmm. Another guy who was really upset at the demolition of the East Wing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But so it's not just one thing. And of course, now there's the MAHA moms, the Make America Healthy Again. You know, not just moms, but the moms are kind of the most visual mm-hmm. part of that. Mm-hmm. And they're real upset at President Trump over his support for a chemical based on glyphosate, which, I mean, part of that movement is anti-chemical, anti-artificial dyes. Mm. And now they're seeing that the guy that they got behind, Trump, is just going in the opposite direction.
That's interesting. No, I agree. There are different ways in which people, for example, Trump came across as a real isolationist when it came to foreign policy, right? He wasn't going to go into other countries. And now there's no country he doesn't want to go into or penalize in some way or other. Yeah. Iran, for example, or, I mean...
Denmark,
but not
Canada.
In the places where he really should be taking some action to try to mm-hmm. defeat genocide. He's not doing that, and instead he's importing Afrikaners here while telling people on temporary visas from Afghanistan to go back, for example. Mm-hmm. He's jumped on that bandwagon, and I think some people are really uncomfortable with having wars, us declaring unilateral wars on other countries where we really have no business being and where it's not of any benefit to us. And sometimes I think he's just trying to change the subject from his own domestic policies.
Or from the Epstein files.
Exactly.
There was a quote in The Hill about foreign policy that I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
It said that Trump's attack on Iran last summer, his decision to float the possibility of regime change there, mm-hmm. Following a number of U.S. strikes on its nuclear facilities, has caused a new rupture across the MAGA universe. That was last summer. And I can't believe that rupture isn't getting more severe as Trump, prepares probably to do something in Iran again.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely.
With all the military, equipment harnessed in and around Iran, it's hard to imagine that it's just a matter of time before he's going to do something.
Where does it stop? You know, something that I found very interesting is... Project 2025, right, which was put out by the Heritage Foundation or Heritage Institute, was supposed to be the blueprint for Trump's term. And I was reading it the other day, all I don't know how many thousands of pages, so it is really, really thick volume. And I found
there
Maduro is in there, right? Nabbing Maduro is in there. Whoever would have thought of doing such a thing? It seemed when he's shooting all those people from the sky and whatnot. And also in there was something correlated to a local bill that was proposed in Iowa, which was about making marriages harder to get out of. Like when you say give your wedding oaths when you're getting married, you can also add a proviso that says I'll never get divorced, you know, unless something absolutely heinous happens.
So complicating the no-fault divorce,
not pass the funnel, thank goodness, because that was proposed. But that's in there too, making the family, you know, boundless numbers of children, a mother who stays home. It's just trying to turn America backwards, and it can all be found in there. So a lot of these things that are happening are not even original thoughts, not just on the part of Iowa, but on the part of the federal government.
I think the far right was taken by surprise by Trump's victory in 2016, but they had 4 years, mm-hmm. 8 years really, to prepare for how they would govern in the next Trump administration, or if it wasn't Trump, somebody else who was equally extreme. Mm-hmm. And Project 2025 lays out the plan, and he's following it.
So, who would you say, Ed? What defines a hardcore Trump supporter going forward now?
Again, there's not one single thing. You know, again, you can be brought into that universe because you thought he would be more of an isolationist president. And let's admit it, you know, Democrats have done a lousy job at foreign policy as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you're tired of seeing regime change wars, maybe there was an appeal there. And maybe because of the alliance that Trump made with RF Kennedy Jr., you were brought in because you thought, well, maybe there's going to finally be some crackdown on big corporate food monopolies that poison us with glyphosate and with dyes in our foods and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe it was abortion. You know, I know one very nice guy who is he knows Trump is a horrible person, but his big issue is abortion. And so he's just, I got to support him because he got done what I needed to be done in my mind, in his mind, on abortion, you know. And that's right. a really narrow agenda.
No, I mean, but those are actually traditional Republican issues, right? Lower taxes and then not necessarily healthy food, but anti-abortion. And yet, look at Trump's behavior. Look at the lawsuit that was settled against him for harassing women, harassing women. Look at all of the women who are lined up. Look at the Epstein files. How does someone who is so anti-abortion, I assume in a lot of cases because of religious or spiritual reasons, how do people justify that kind of behavior?
You know, I can't explain that, and I don't bother to push people on that. Mm. I'm just encouraged when I see people saying, well, maybe this isn't really what I wanted to vote for.
I think one of a big aspect of Trump's appeal, frankly, was this anti-immigration movement.
Probably.
And
yeah,
I think that's
unfortunate.
That is very unfortunate because he's made this big case as to how he's going after these hardened criminals and murderers and gangsters and so on. And these people are not that. The people who are being rounded up in cities, for the most part,
70-something% have no criminal record.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And those horrible facilities like Alligator Alcatraz that was built, you know, that was just demeaning and degrading and people in pens. But yes, I think that still in this country, there is this sense that, you know, they're coming in here and taking our jobs. And what Trump is more insidiously trying to do is instill the fear of otherness. You know, they come from these cultures like they're eating the dogs and the cats. The cats and,
right.
Haitians.
Those Haitians.
In Springfield. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
That stuff. So it's very insidious.
And that's an age-old tactic, divide and conquer. Mm. Create an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
It was done in India.
Mm-hmm.
Divided the Hindus and Muslims. It was done in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
It's an age-old tactic.
Yeah.
And when you really look at it, the enemy you're being proposed to dislike or hate even, it really has a lot more in common with you than the person who's pushing that scenario on you.
Well, not only that, you need those enemies. You need those people to drive your trucks like the Sikhs do across America, you know? And you need those people to be your doctors in small towns and your engineers and things. But he's really making it about the kinds of stereotypes that he throws around about foreigners are really racist and hurtful to a lot of populations.
And it is unfortunate that appeals to some people. But, you know, I think it would have less appeal if Democrats had actually done what needed to be done on immigration. Now, to his credit, President Biden tried to take a more comprehensive approach and a bipartisan approach, and he had Republicans supporting it. And then Trump said, no, vote that down because I want to use this as a campaign issue.
As a campaign issue.
It was shameless, but it was effective.
Yep.
I would hope that people would see through that right there.
Absolutely. But do they see that it was Republicans who blocked it, who blocked, you know, reform on immigration?
And not even Republicans. Again, there were Republicans in the House and Senate who were willing to go along with a compromise. It wasn't perfect, but it was a big step forward.
Mm-hmm.
It was Trump that killed it.
Totally
for personal and political reasons.
Because he has such enormous power everywhere, over everything.
And I think that's waning. And we got to take a short break, Reka. Ed Fallon with you here. Reka Basu, my guest today. We'll be back in a minute with more conversation on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land. Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate, personalized service. Check out Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry, who's got 23 years in the real estate business. Joe is also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe at 515-208-7312.
The Republicans should say, we want to take over. We should take over the voting in at least many, 15 places. The Republicans ought to nationalize the voting.
Given that the Constitution dictates elections be run by the states, the president's comments triggered Democratic outrage.
I don't see this as a distraction. I see it as an actual threat. He has said out loud what he wants to do.
And polite pushback from top Republicans.
It's always been the responsibility of the states to administer elections.
I want to see elections be honest.
President Trump pressed late today, insisting there are problems with elections in multiple states.
Horrible corruption on elections, and the federal government should not allow that. The federal government should get involved.
It comes amid growing alarm among Democrats following last week's FBI raid of a Fulton County, Georgia election center. The FBI seizing hundreds of boxes of ballots and other documents related to the 2020 election, which the president has repeatedly and falsely claimed was stolen.
That's an NBC News report about Trump. Well, focusing on Trump's call to the Republican Party to nationalize the election. Yeah, it's a remarkable thing, folks. It's never happened. And the Constitution is very, very clear about that. I think it was the Secretary of State in Maine who was running for governor there who offered to send President Trump a pocket-sized version of the U.S. Constitution. So this is building, the call for the election to be nationalized is building on a whole string of moves from this administration to, you know, try to exert more control over elections. You know, and again, in the process, of course, he and his allies, Trump's allies, are continuing to make false claims about the 2020 election. You know, I mean, look at the things that are happening. Fulton County, Georgia. You know, Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, nothing to do with elections. She was sent there by Trump. You know, that was clear. She was sent there by Trump to oversee the theft of all kinds of election information and materials. And then that was followed up by a pep talk with the president. I mean, the fact that the president is doing that is incredible. The fact that the director of national intelligence is involved, you know, there's nothing like this. And now there's nothing like the feds demanding that Minnesota and now 24 other states hand over all their voter rolls. In fact, they're being sued. They're being sued by the DOJ, Department of Justice, to hand over complete voter rolls. You know, and on top of that, I mean, earlier last year, Trump signed an executive order that would have required proof of citizenship to vote. And, you know, that sounds reasonable on the surface when you start thinking about the fact that a lot of people don't have passports, that some might have... you could pull out your birth certificate, but how many of you listening could tell me exactly where your birth certificate is now, or how easy it would be to find it. Go ahead, raise your hands. Okay, I don't see too many hands up. The bottom line is it's really hard to imagine how lots of people would not be disenfranchised. A lot of women change their names when they get married. I know some guys who change their names when they get married. And, you know, and so all kinds of things can happen that could make it very difficult, if not impossible, to prove yourself eligible to vote. And of course, gerrymandering. That's been going on. Started with Texas. That might be a wash, actually. That might be a wash. And, you know, I think right now the Trump team is really worried that they're looking at what's happening in elections across the country, even here in Iowa. We've had several elections in Iowa, I think four, that have flipped seats from Republican to Democrat, or in one case, the Democrat vastly outperformed what the previous Democratic candidate had done. But in most cases, even in districts that Trump won, Democrats are winning. And so Trump and Steve Miller and Bob, they see this and they know that they are in for a big problem this November. And, you know, and that's on top of the fact that the midterm election is always bad news for whatever party controls the White House. So I'm encouraged that there are some Republicans that are also speaking out against this. I hope that grows. It's not that many. I mean, again, there were Republicans who spoke out against the notion or the lie that Trump was spreading in 2020, that election was stolen, including, you know, the governor of Georgia, including the Secretary of State of Georgia. You know, they were speaking out against that, and they got chastised by Trump because of it. I hope more Republicans, elected officials, especially elections officials, are willing to speak out about how wrong it is that the 2026 election might be nationalized. So, yeah. Here's a quote from the New York Times I want to share with you. If Republicans don't get them out, you will never win another election as a Republican, Trump said, referring to undocumented immigrants. Republicans have to get undocumented immigrants out, which is just crazy because undocumented immigrants can't vote. They can't vote. And okay, so they looked at Georgia. An independent audit studied the 2020 election in Georgia. And it was done by the Secretary of State's office in Georgia, which is controlled by a Republican. And it found that out of 8.2 million votes cast in 2020 in Georgia, you want to guess what percentage were cast by non-citizens? 20. No, not 20%. 20 votes out of 8.2 million. That's a rounding error. That's like so small. You can't even quantify that as a problem. So there may have been some maliciousness there. I don't know the full story of that, but I'm guessing most of that was an oops moment. Oops, didn't know. You know, again, 20 out of 8.2 million. So there's not a problem here, Mr. President. There's not a problem. We know what you're trying to do. You're trying to make sure that you do not lose control of Congress. It's crystal clear. You know, and I know they're moving as fast as possible to establish an authoritarian government here because it's pretty clear that the actions of President Trump in the first year all point to consolidation of power in the executive branch. Now, it's been encouraging that the courts have pushed back. Like, for example, I mentioned earlier the executive order that he signed, I think it was last March, that would have required proof of citizenship to vote. It would also have required that all mail-in ballots had to be received by the time the polls closed on Election Day, which, you know, that you can't count on that. The post office does as best as they can, but things don't always get done on time. So that's why there's always been a bit of a lag time there. So anyway, what happened? Well, the courts, every single time, they voted him down. They ruled him out of place on this. They ruled against him. You know, so, I mean, he's finding blocks. And again, not all courts. Some of the court rulings have gone his way, especially if something gets up to the Supreme Court level. But
So what are people to do? You know, let's be clear. Trump is going to try to steal the election this fall. And ironically, maybe not ironically, it's a typical political tactic. You accuse your opponent of doing what you intend to do or what you have done. In this case, what he intends to do. He accuses Democrats of having stolen the 2020 election because he plans to steal the 2026 election. You know, and I've seen this. I've had experience with this. When I ran for Congress, the Democratic establishment pulled out all the stops. They went to every end possible to make sure that I would lose. They took me very seriously in that race. And again, one thing they do is they come after you on your strengths. I was accused of being a money grubber, which if anybody who knows me is laughable. I'm the least, if there's a person least concerned about money in the world than I am, they're probably living in a monastery or in a hermitage, or they're Amish. I mean, I just don't care. They also accused me of being a pal to sex offenders, which is ironic because I was the only vote against a bill that actually made it harder for local governments to local jurisdictions to manage where sex offenders should live. Long story there, but this is what they do. They come after you on your strength. They did it to John Kerry with the Swift voting. I mean, he's running against the guy who basically dodged the draft, right? They accuse him of being, of having abused his time in Vietnam. It happens. And this is what Trump is doing. He's accusing us of preparing to steal the 2026 election, because that's what he's going to do. So Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reid said, quote, I think they, meaning the president and his team, are increasingly desperate, increasingly scared about what's going to happen when they are held accountable by American voters. So we have to be prepared for everything. And I think that's really key. We have to be prepared for everything. I do appreciate that some of the election officials around the country who are preparing for anything aren't willing to talk about that, and I don't blame them. Why tell the Trump administration what you're going to do based on what you expect them to do? I get that. You know, there's another irony here I got to point out, and that is that, you know, Trump is saying the federal government ought to come in and take over elections. Well, that did happen once before, didn't it? Back in the 60s, when black voters were being systematically and aggressively denied their franchise. I mean, it was easy to document how bad that was. It was not a guessing game. It was not anecdotal. It was very clear. Blacks in Alabama, Mississippi, other states were being denied the right to vote. So the federal government came in and said, okay, you've got to do some certain things here to make sure that this is fair. You know, that may be an appropriate role for the federal government. It certainly was back then. But the opposite is happening now. You know, everything that Trump has said about immigrants voting is wrong. Again, 8.2 million votes in Georgia in 2020. 20 of them were from undocumented immigrants. I won't even get into how minuscule that is. But so, yeah, there is. So here we got, Trump using the federal government to call for election meddling, you know, and sometimes referencing, well, you did it back in the 60s, but for a completely different reason, one that is documentably legitimate. So my prediction is that this is only going to continue to ramp up. It's hard to know where this is going to go, but I do not see the Trump administration backing down. They know what is going to happen in the 2026 election if things go according to the law. The Democrats will take over the House, probably in a big way. I say there's probably a good chance the Democrats will win back the Senate. And those will provide such huge checks and balances on Trump's power that you're not going to see. You're not going to see him accomplish all the stuff that he has begun to work on now. We'll talk about some of that, by the way, in the next segment. But I think what is his strongest tool? What is the strongest tool the Trump administration could bring to play on this? Well, it's military force. I think we saw that tested
in Minnesota, still being tested there. We saw a version of it in Fulton County, Georgia. And I think we're going to see more of it and potentially a huge influx of military personnel to try to suppress the vote at key polling places in, you know, in targeted districts. They will even try to make off with equipment, make off with the votes. It's hard to say exactly how many different ways that might play out, but I will not be at all surprised. I will be surprised if we don't see some use of federal military force to assure that the election goes the way that Trump wants it to. So what can we do? Be vigilant. Support our Republican and Democratic auditors and election officials who are speaking truth and recognizing the reality of what's going on here. Hey, I got to take a short break. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. I'm Ed Fallon. With me, Charles Goldman. All right, Charles, I don't know how closely you've been following the Iowa legislature. It's only a few weeks in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't follow it too closely anymore. I'm kind of happy never to have to go up there, honestly.
Yeah.
But I'm very interested in the debate on eminent domain, partly because that was one of the big things I worked on up there, was trying to rein in the abuse of eminent domain. And the House, the Republican-controlled House, passed overwhelmingly a strong bill that would prevent Summit Carbon Solutions from using eminent domain to build their pipeline. There were 28 no votes against passing this bill. Do you want to guess, Charles, how many of those no votes were Republican and how many were Democrats?
I don't imagine. I wouldn't think more than single digits.
20 of the 28 were Democrats.
Yeah.
So only a handful of Democrats voted for this bill, including the minority leader, who was running for Congress until a couple of days after this, she dropped out,
right.
I noticed.
Right.
But she voted for it. I mean, I'm just thinking, okay, yeah, Democrats continue to have their heads in the sand and continue to have basically a political death wish. I mean, Josh Turley was one of those Democrats that voted for the bill, one of the handful mm-hmm. that voted for it. And he said, quote, "I proudly stand for property rights and am against eminent domain being used for corporate gain. 85% of Iowans are with us on this, and it's the right thing to do. Property rights are fundamental American rights."
So what are the Democrats offering as an alternative to this bill?
They aren't.
Then why are they voting?
They aren't.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to upset the one labor union that might benefit from some jobs, providing that those jobs mostly don't go to out-of-state union workers, which they did during the Dakota Access Pipeline construction. You could barely find an Iowa plate. One out of 10 plates at a construction site would have been from Iowa. So, I mean, they're not only seeing the big picture, they're falling for a ruse. So here's Adam Stein is one of what, five Republicans running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear what he had to say? He said Eminent domain is the number one issue.
Is he the one who's going to get rid of the mRNA vaccines?
He's doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
I know they had the debate without Feenstra there, and all of them were big on. They had to talk about the vaccines, and they were as literate as, you know.
Oh, during one of the RFK debates, Jr. Yeah. Well, he was a former Department of General Services head, I believe. He says eminent domain is the number one issue across Iowa. I agree with him. It's not number one. It's right up there. And then he said, if Republicans don't pass a ban on letting corporations use it to build pipelines, Rob Sand will be the next governor. So he's throwing down the gauntlet to the Iowa Senate, because the Iowa Senate is trying to avoid the strong House bill by passing a weak bill that seems to address
the
problem.
Is that the one that says they have to look to reroute it?
Yeah, yeah.
If possible.
Yeah. And you know, most instructive is this. The person who's assigned to the subcommittee, who's chairing the subcommittee, Mike Bussolo, mm-hmm. Senator Bussolo, he used to work for Summit. So I don't know how that's not a conflict of interest. Anyway, so it'll be fascinating to see what happens on this. Again, Democrats is continuing, with some exceptions, Josh Turley, for example, continuing to totally blow it when it comes to what are they going to, you know, where are they going to stand on this issue? Anyway. Yeah. So you wanted to talk about the EPA because apparently they're doing some things that are not good. They're going to be ignoring health impacts when it comes to how they determine the viability of a project.
Right. The environmental impact of various projects. And, in cases that came before the Supreme Court when Scalia was still alive, on several of them, he talked about that, you know, you do have to do risk and benefit, right? So, but benefit this EPA, this EPA has decided that, you know, the main risk is to, and that, of course, is one of the things the EPA is, by charter, supposed to do, is to consider human health issues to environmental impacts that are created by industries that put a lot of debris into the air. And so they've decided that they're no longer going to consider the health benefits of reducing air pollution because they're uncertain.
What tiny fraction of the American people would support that?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
because it's only there for one thing, which is to say it'll be cheaper for industry.
Yeah.
It'll make electricity cheaper. We won't have to do any of this mitigation. And that means more jobs.
Yeah.
Right. Well, see, if industry is just unbridled and unregulated, everything will be better. So basically they're saying that, asthma, pulmonary complications, deaths now are considered a zero.
Yeah.
In terms of the risk benefit.
And even before, they were basically valued based on their economic impact, which I find just really insulting. But
well,
that was better than nothing.
That's true, and because the valuation on human life is a little bit, it's subject of controversy how you value a human life, and that's part of how you would look at something that might cause death. The other thing I love about this is that they're in particular they're talking about allowing the industries to pollute the air with a more particulate matter. What goes on the PM 2.5 regulation. And PM 2.5 actually has been shown to be a factor, rising air pollution of particulate matter is a factor in maternal exposure in subsequent development of autism. In fact.
Oh, I thought it was Tylenol.
No. In fact, PM 2.5 probably has more impact on the rise in autism, not, of course, anywhere near the genetic issue. But versus vaccines, which is...
And that's demonstrable.
It's demonstrable.
Yeah.
And Tylenol, of course, is even more ludicrous.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Yeah.
Let's put a little more particulate matter in and then blame vaccines that longer get.
This is clearly Trump siding with the industries that helped him get elected and continue to fund his various grifts.
Well, my favorite thing about this is that the, sort of associate director who's in charge of this activity has cystic fibrosis.
Oh, ouch.
I guess being part of the Trump administration is a suicide pact, which is that you have cystic fibrosis, you're the type of person who would benefit from the air being cleaner. Like, the other thing I question is, you know, oligarchs breathe the air too. I mean, yeah, I know they're going to live in the bunker,
but they,
you know,
right.
And they're going to, you know, ultrafiltrate right. their air. But I mean, they do walk outside, you know. I don't know.
Only when they have to.
Yeah. I don't know why they think that these sorts of risks only apply to other people.
Yeah. And speaking of health, the Trump administration came out with a health care, quote, plan. It's called the Great Healthcare Plan. Of course, the word great is in there.
The usual.
I know you like the
I love
great.
That adjective.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they say the first thing that tells you you have dementia is that you start is your use of adjectives.
Yeah. Well, how many hundreds of pages would you expect this plan to be, Charles?
I mean, it'd be thousands of pages. Let's face it.
Well, you know,
in industry this big.
It's 350
words in
summary. Words.
I heard that.
Not pages.
Right.
Words.
Right.
Yeah. And there's an accompanying fact sheet that lays it out in more detail. That's 825
words.
Words.
Right.
Yeah.
So this came about because, you know, the concept of a health plan, which, you know, President Trump has told us about for 10 years now, finally kind of came home to roost, which was over the controversy in terms of the subsidies for the ACA mm-hmm. policies at the end of last year. And so to try to distract and say, well, we don't need to do that because I have this great plan. This 850-word treatise came out. And, you know, it was the usual warmed-over stuff. The big thing was, remember for a while he'd been talking about that we should just hand the money directly to people instead of a subsidy because all the subsidies do is make the health insurance companies richer.
Well, he's got a point there.
Well, except when you hand that same money to the people to buy health care insurance,
it's
the same
health care
companies
right,
yeah. that get richer.
But I mean, that was my concern about the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. And, you know, the day it passed, insurance stocks shot up. And that didn't happen coincidentally. Insurance companies knew that this was a good deal for them.
It's a good deal for them, but the ACA was clearly expanded people being able to get health care.
Yeah.
It also expanded Medicaid. Remember, that was part of the ACA. And it also set some minimums for what you had to cover. It got rid of lifetime maximums and policies. It got rid of that it wouldn't cover pre-existing conditions at all or until the person had been a subscriber for 5 years, after which they drop you, you know. And preventive services and a lot of other things. So that's why you have to have a healthcare plan that's more than 850 words. Mm-hmm. But the point is that if you were given this money, so it was going to basically be an expansion of the health savings account. Mm-hmm. But health savings accounts are basically for people who are high tax bracket people already, because the policies that are covered or offered under HSA accounts are high deductible and high copay, right? So yes, you get a subsidy, but for the most part, the savings is to the health insurance company, mm-hmm. right? And if you give that to somebody who doesn't have much resources, and how much money were they going to give them? Give them a couple $1,000s? That wouldn't pay for you to have an ER visit.
Yeah.
Right?
Which says volumes.
Just, right. It's just totally cynical. Right.
So, I mean, my sense is that he's doing this because he knows that healthcare is an issue on enough voters' minds that something needs to be done. I've same reason.
Right, but nothing. But the thing is, nothing's being done.
Right. Well, there are efforts to achieve some kind of compromise House and Senate, but
on having the subsidies go for a little bit further along.
I thought there were some other negotiating points as well that were beyond that.
That was the main thing, which is at least so that people would know how much insurance is going to be coming this year. And then, of course, is the issue, and you were just, I'm sure as, you know, people who listen to you know, you were at the recent rally here.
The Trump rally. Yeah, Charles,
Which I believe he did tell the story again of Macron telling him he'd raise the prices of drugs.
I got thrown out so quickly I missed
all
that.
Okay, yeah, that evidently from what I saw, that he told that story numerous times.
Just so people know why I got thrown out, I was wearing a shirt that said liar on it.
Right.
Although
I heard some people say you should have had it on both sides of your shirt.
Well, I know, I should have, yeah.
So as you were being thrown out, they could have seen it from the front.
Exactly, yeah. I did turn toward the media as I was walking out, but the officer quickly, you know, pointed me the other direction.
Well, but he told that story about that he talked to Macron about raising the price of drugs in France so that it would be easier for us to lower the price of drugs to the newly raised price of drugs in France. And of course, Macron said he never had this discussion. I mean, the whole thing was ridiculous. But he's told that story now at least four different times. I don't know why. He told it at the Davos Forum.
Yeah.
And everybody was looking at him and thinking, this makes no sense. Why would you tell them to raise their prices if you want the lower price?
Hey, we got to take a short break, folks. I'm Ed Fallon. Charles Goldman's with me here.
Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Hey, good to have you back with me on the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon, your host. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay and negotiated fee basis. Contact DavidDrakeFamilyPsychiatry.com. Hey, it's farm and food time, and with me to have that conversation, Kathy Burns.
Once again,
and we're looking at the benefits to cities and towns of allowing agriculture inside the city limits.
Yep, allowing it, and if you already have it, increasing it. Saw an article in ScienceDirect.com called Urban Agriculture, a Strategic Pathway to Building Resilience and Enduring Sustainable Food Security in Cities. Had some great segmented pieces of information. I thought we could give some examples of benefits to cities.
Yeah, and we certainly have our own list from our urban farming ventures here in Des Moines' oldest neighborhood, Sherman Hill. And but I know this research is good because it looks all over the world and comes up with a whole bunch of things. Some of them we never even thought of.
Right.
Yeah.
The first benefit to cities might come out of the blue to some people, the water management.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, they estimate in 2012 that more than 40% of our global population, in 2012, they estimated that more than 40% of the population by the year 2050 will be located in water-stressed areas.
I would argue that it's probably happening more quickly.
Yes.
And already we're getting really close to that.
Yeah, that study is quite old, and I'm sure that we are, that would be upped a little bit. But considering that large-scale agriculture, you know, traditional farming.
Conventional.
You know, rural stuff.
Conventional farming.
Uses about 70% of global fresh water.
Wow.
We can look to urban agriculture because it is increasingly using targeted irrigation, circular systems. They collect and reuse water to grow crops and saving water. An example of that is in an Indian city where the use of drip irrigation resulted in water savings of up to 60%.
Yeah,
that's just one example.
I see that. I'm Edabad, and I was there.
I wondered if you were familiar.
Yeah, I stayed with Mrs. Kulkarni there for a few days when I was studying Gandhi's activities in India, which is good timing for this week's program.
Sure.
Because this is the January 30th is the anniversary of Gandhi's assassination.
I didn't know that we were going to have this all in such a tiny little package.
Well, I know. But, I mean, we know, you know, we obviously use city water to irrigate our crops here.
Yes.
But we also have a rain barrel,
two rain barrels.
And the rain barrels provide quite a bit. I mean, I don't know how many thousands of gallons of water we get from our rain barrels a year. It's a lot. But then we also use mulch.
Yes.
Mulch is key in helping to preserve moisture content and reducing the amount of water you need to apply.
Mm-hmm. Well, waste management is another biggie, and we're very familiar with this example because the stats show that a backyard chicken is expected to consume about 1.6 pounds of food scraps per week. Yearly, that one chicken then will be taking care of 83 pounds of waste that would normally go into the city waste system.
Yeah, at a cost to taxpayers and also the landfill capacity.
And if you only have a flock of six birds, that's 500 pounds of waste kept out of the systems per year.
Yeah.
So multiply that by more and more backyard chickens, which we are always fans of. You've got a lot of waste reduction in your city.
Yeah. We take leaves from our yard and we throw them in the chicken coop for bedding.
Yes.
That's one more thing that doesn't end up in the waste stream.
Does not. Yeah. So much good. Emissions management. The urban trees, and if those are fruit trees, I think all the better. Ed, you might feel the same.
Oh, yeah.
they are known to absorb about 711,000 metric tons of air pollution per year. And I'm bad because I didn't catch where that was located. So, oops, insufficient notes on my part. But green roofs in urban areas also significantly reduce air pollutants. So we've got emissions management going on.
One thing too,
I
say, trees in urban neighborhoods also add value to properties.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
If you're just thinking about money, there's an issue there as well.
Well, and if we would get, I don't think we're going to get to the economic benefits category, but that is, you know, the land value is one of the benefits of urban gardening too.
Yeah, another point in this study I see is that, you know, the reducing transportation costs of hauling food from elsewhere around the world.
Mm-hmm.
If you're growing it in your city, there's very, very little transportation cost.
That's right.
If you're growing it in your backyard, there's none.
I kind of like the social well-being category because when we look at issues like housing and violence, people often say, well, we need more social and personal well-being. Urban ag can play a role in that, but it enhances social interactions.
Yeah, for example, we had a 7-year-old girl come by here the other day on her birthday, and we said, oh, you want to see our animals? And she came back, and she saw our two new baby rabbits, and she asked if she could name them.
Yes.
Well, she asked first what their names were. I said, none, but you get to name them. It's your birthday.
So. And then she helped us make butter.
We
do not have our own milk cow, which is too bad, but she helped us make butter.
All kinds of good reasons why we got to be encouraging more urban agriculture. And Des Moines, ideally,
should be
the local food capital of the U.S.
Hooray.
We're already doing good stuff. Let's keep it going. Kathy, thank you for joining me. Folks, thanks to our guest today, Rekha Basu. Thanks to our production team, which includes me and Kathy, and Sherry Herdina, Forrest Detterman, and Charles Goldman. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Catholic Peace Ministry, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. Finally, thanks to the Des Moines Ivor Session for our bumper music. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.